This is the SF Signal Podcast. I am your host. My name is Patrick Hester, and today I have a live panel recording I did while on faculty at the Pikes Peak Writers Conference in Colorado Springs, Colorado. A little bit about the conference. PPWC is held every year in April and is a great conference for writers of all levels. Each year, the folks at PPWC bring in the best of the best as keynote speakers, and this year was heavy with genre authors such as Carol Berg, Chuck Wendig, and Jim C. Hines, who were all kind enough to join Amy Boggs and myself in discussing diversity in genre fiction. We laughed, we cried, we took some questions from the audience, and now you get to hear it right here on SF Signal. Have thoughts about this topic, about diversity in genre fiction? Please leave them in the comments, and let's get the discussion going. To learn more about the Pikes Peak Writers Conference, please visit pikespeakwriters.com. And now, take it away, me! Yeah, see, that just sounds weird. Hi, my name is Patrick. I am the host of the SF Signal podcast, the Functional Nerds podcast, and I'm also the Hugo Award-winning podcast producer of the Camel Award-winning Merle Afferty's I Should Be Writing. I kind of stumbled. Anyway, hey, we're here to talk about diversity, and none of us is going to be as eloquent as Jim was earlier, but we're going to try.
Including
anyway.
Jim.
But this is the SF Signal podcast. So if you want to hear this later, you can go to sfsignal.com. You'll be able to download it there. Okay? What I want to do is go down the line here and have everybody introduce themselves and tell you who they are and what they do. Let's start with Carol.
My name is Carol Berg. I write epic fantasy. I have 13 books out, 14th coming in August.
That's it?
Oh, well, I teach workshops. I do panels.
She's not telling you is she's awesome, okay? She's really nice. You come up to her in the bar, buy her a drink, she'll talk to you, okay?
That's very true.
Yes. She's from Texas. We don't hold that against her.
That was a long time ago.
They put sauce on meat. We don't like that. Next up, we have Mr. Jim Hines.
My name's Jim. I write books about goblins and princesses and librarians and spiders who set things on fire. Yeah, that's me.
Blogger.
He's a blogger.
Blogger.
Yeah.
He's a Hugo Award winner for fan writer. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. He's done some covers. You may have seen them around the place. They were in the bookstore. He's very famous. And in case you didn't know, if there is a door you need unlocked or a Dalek you need to defeat, Jim has a sonic screwdriver in his coat. He's ready to go.
Doesn't everybody?
No. Chuck.
Oh, weird.
I am Chuck Wendig. I'm a novelist and screenwriter and game designer. I'm the author of such novels as Blackbirds, Blue Blazes, and Under the Empyrean Sky. I write adult, young adult, diner menus, Jim's bio, gravestone headers, whatever. You just pay me and I will write anything.
And last but certainly not least, the only person on this panel I haven't met previously. Hi.
I'm Amy Boggs. I'm a literary agent at the Donald Moss Literary Agency, which has been representing sci-fi fantasy for over 30 years now. I've only been there for 5. And I also blog at a very publishing-focused blog called Publishing Hub, where I do a monthly Diverse Words link roundup about diversity in publishing and books.
So diversity is a big topic these days, right? Can I see a show of hands? Anybody in here who knows or is a woman? All right, pretty good. Anybody in here know or is someone who's of a different skin color than white? Okay, yeah, pretty good. Anybody in here know or is gay? Okay. When's the last time you read a science fiction or fantasy novel that had a character who was gay or of a different color or had a strong female lead? Mm-hmm. Not as many hands. That's the problem. You know, as I recently had an interview with Elizabeth Baer, and she said something great. She said, I think that what's going on right now is the flowering of new perspectives in the genre. I thought that was awesome, because what we're talking about here is trying to get people of color, people of different religions, people of different cultures,
sexes, everything into the books that we write and the books that we read. The reason being, anybody here, show of hands, who's heard of Spider-Man? Did you know they recently launched a Hispanic Spider-Man?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So now, tons of Hispanic kids went, holy crap, there's a superhero for me. How awesome is that? Don't you want everybody to kind of feel like that and have someone that they can relate to? How am I doing, Jim?
Hey, you're doing great.
Yeah? Okay. So this is kind of what Jim was talking about today at lunch, diversity. And there's lots of crap out there. Ignore the crap. Okay? This is stuff that we want. Let's go down, and since Jim was on the lunch, we'll skip you for now. We're not going to put you on the spot. Chuck, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Oh, God.
Diversity, science fiction, and fantasy.
Yeah.
You talk about this a lot, too.
I do. Do you have a question, or you just want me to talk about it?
No, I just want you to talk about it.
All right, I'll talk about it. I used to work for the Bucks County Library System, and I worked in marketing in that particular biblio realm. And under marketing was also outreach to the community. Bucks County, Pennsylvania, for those who don't know, is a fairly middle class to upper middle class, white and affluent neighborhood, county. So the initial sort of response of our library, which, you know, looked much like a lot of people like me, they designed the shelves and the curriculum and everything kind of outreach to the community that they knew. But there's a lot of parts of Bucks County that were not represented in that outreach. And so my boss and I sort of conspired in a very positive way to outreach to what we considered an underserved and underrepresented community. And that can be anyone from the elderly to blind to deaf, transgender, anybody that we were not, that was basically not a white person and who had a lot of money. We were trying to speak to them, because obviously the library is there for an entire community and not for just a single subset of the community, despite the theoretical representation of that community that we see every day. And so what happened was, when we did that, and I think this is the lesson that authors can maybe take away, is we had, surprise, surprise, more people come in and use the library. It's such a weird idea that when you talk to more people are listening. So, you know, and that's my takeaway for authors is both on a human level and a human responsibility level and on a crass commercial level, if you care to go that way, there is no reason not to reach out to an underrepresented and an underserved community and broaden your audience, and also by nature then broaden your own reading habits and become a better reader.
So I do have a question. So I'm going to ask Amy first.
All right.
What challenges do people of color, women, transgender, etc., face in the publishing world today?
Well,
how's that for a question?
A lot. You might not know this, but publishing is very overwhelmingly white, and a lot of that has to do with the history of the business and who they go after in terms of, you know, trying to get new editors and things like that. And so a big part of that is that you get a lot of editors out there who are saying, I want a character that I relate to, but they only have that one perspective. Everyone's upper middle class, white, went to Ivy League schools, that sort of thing. And so you get a very limited kind of idea of what literature is from that perspective. I feel it's getting better because we're talking about it more, which is why it's very important to keep talking and keep listening, as Jim said so wonderfully in his speech. And it's hard to pinpoint what specific challenges there are, because a lot of it has to do with microaggressions and everyday sort of little biases that people hold, and trying to get past that and trying to make everyone realize that you can't just say, oh, the market doesn't want this, is that you're not reaching the market that does want it, you're not focusing on the people who do want it.
Right, it comes back to Spider-Man.
Yes,
there are kids
exactly.
out there who want superheroes that look like them. And those kids grow up to be young adult readers who want characters in their books that look like them and that have the same feelings that they have and are having the same experiences they have. And then those become adults who want those books. You see where I'm going here?
Everything comes back to Spider-Man.
Yes. Yes. Ultimate Spider-Man, by the way. Carol.
I think one of the challenges that women writers have is the girl cooties problem. As a writer of epic fantasy, there's a large readership out there that believes that women cannot write gritty fantasy, that everything a woman writes is romantic, is soft, is fluffy, is and anybody who's read any of my books knows I don't write soft and fluffy and gritty. Yeah. But it, you know, I've got to say it's something I didn't well, for one thing, I didn't expect to be doing this at this time in my life. But I came of age in a time when I went in and was doing a job interview right after I graduated from college with the vice president of Pennzoil. I was a mathematics major. They had a new program for mathematics majors. And he asked me if I was engaged. This is after I'd gone through a long series of interviews. And he asked me if I was engaged. And being, you know, honest person, I said, but yes, I was. He said, can you guarantee that you will be in Houston for 2 years? And I said, well, it happened that the fiancé was 1A in the draft. This was during Vietnam War. And I said, well, you know, I can't say that. He says, you know, we have no jobs for you. And this is after I'd passed through a series of jobs. These questions are now illegal. I thought we'd come a long way. And so now I get into publishing and I find out, oh, you know, I'm not going to read your book because, you know, and I say, well, you know, actually I write fairly gritty fantasy. There's very little. I mean, actually, I have readers who say, would you please give your heroes a break and let them have a little comfort? I say, well, someday, maybe. In between books, they can have it. I had someone tell me, well, you know, when I pick up a book by a guy, I know what I'm going to get. But if I pick up a book by a woman, you know, I just don't know what I'm going to get. You know, obviously it's going to spread, whatever it is. I thought this was a battle that had been fought. And when I got into publishing, because I got in kind of late, you know, my first book was published in 2000, and because I was never going to do this. But, you know, I expected I would find this world of liberals like myself and people who had all these wonderful ideas. And that was a harsh reality that women have to face right now, is this readership. And so I'm, you know, the outreach, the idea of outreach, the idea of, I didn't mind reading boy adventures when I was a kid. You know, I really didn't care one way or another. I just wanted a good story. That's what I want to write. I want to write good stories, whether, you know, it's women or not. I don't feel the obligation, because to me, one of the victories of feminism is that I can write whatever I damn well please, okay? And I don't have to write women in chainmail and, you know, chicks in chainmail. I don't have to write that to write strong women. And so, you know, it was really disappointing, and I continue to be flummoxed by the opposition to a speech like you gave today, that there are people who would say, oh, you old softy, you know, you old PC softy.
Yeah.
So come on, let's get this done. I'm dead.
By the way, Carol, Dynamite called about Red Sonja. Are you?
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Gail Simone has been doing Red Sonja.
Yes, it's been very good.
I haven't had a chance to check it out, but I hear that it's been amazing.
Yes.
In terms of, I mean, you talked a little bit about the backlash to things like the speech and blogging about all of this. Now, if you come into publishing as an author, there is some pressure these days that you have to get out there, you have to publicize yourself, you have to market yourself. Depending on the publisher, depending on how you're doing this, it could be an explicit, you must go on Twitter or we are canceling your book. Or it might just be, you know, it might be a good idea if you got out there and started doing the Twitters.
Twitter, what's
the
that?
Tweeties, the tweeties.
The thing
what's
is,
Twitter?
Though, right there, you go on the internet, there will be trolls, there will be crap. You know, the kind of backlash that I will get as a guy, it's really not that bad. The kind of backlash my women friend authors get is obscene. You know, for writing, you know, we both post the same thing, and I get, oh, look, Jim is doing his liberal quota thing again, and she gets rape threats.
Yeah, or death threats.
She gets...
Not me.
Right.
there are comic book writers, female comic book writers, who have gotten that. Mm-hmm. There are authors who write science fiction
prestigious women who've nominated awards, incredible writers, women of color.
And sometimes just by dint of writing, not by even getting out there and writing what might be considered controversial, and I put that in very sarcastic
parts. Right.
Oh, so they write books, and so they get that.
Just by daring to have a voice.
Right. Yes.
And they'll get attacked on appearance. They will get online harassment, and it just, it's ridiculous.
It is.
And as guys, it's easy to not even see that. Because, you know, the worst I get is a troll here and there. So why are you all whining about the internet being so hard? And then people start posting some of the comments they get. Like, holy crap!
Yeah.
And it's not just comments. There have been sexual harassment, which is all kinds of fun.
There are people who have posted women's names and addresses online and said, hey, this chick gave me a bad review of my book, and she lives here, and this is her address, this is her email address. Y'all should go let her know what we think of that.
Yeah.
This is not just science fiction fantasy community.
No,
this is the world that we live in.
Who's ever heard of the Good Old Boy Network?
Yeah.
So there's so many challenges today. What are some of the solutions? Carol?
Write good books. You know, write books, you know, that are passionate and that are not preachy, but that incorporate, as Jim was talking about today, a population that reflects the world. And when, you know, if the day comes, one problem that we have certainly in our neck of the woods is whitewashing covers. I write, you know, my first novel, the hero is a man with copper-colored skin and almond-slanted eyes. And I have three different covers, three different depictions of the same character. None of them reflect any of that. And it wasn't, actually, I went through, you know, a number of translations. The French got it right. The French are the only ones who adhered to that. I have no say in my covers. I now am at the point where I can sort of put, you know, input things, but I know many, many authors who have people of color in their, you know, they've done it. They write, and it's not like it's, you know, oh, pointy, look what I did. This is the world that they write in, whether it's this world or another world they invent or whatever. And I think there needs to be, yes, covers are marketing. So again, it comes back to who's buying these books and who are we speaking to and educating, you know, starting with our YA or our middle grades and whatever, and that this is a thing that happens. You know, I have four grandchildren, all of whom are Chinese American, and I want them to find out, you know, this has come home to me, because when I was a kid, everybody I knew was white. Well, we started having, you know, African American kids in our schools, and that was, you know, that was fine, and that was great, and we were friends, but, you know, when I see that, you know, the generation of my children and my nieces and nephews, you know, we have a Ramirez, we have a Anand, we have, we have Indian, we have Chinese, we have everything, and it's incredible, it's wonderful, it's a wonderful part of the world, and I want them all to, and part of it is seeing visualization as well as the writing.
And yet, look at who we have on this panel.
Yes. Yep. Well, that's actually the white elephant in the room.
Yeah. Spoiler warning.
Oh, I'm making Jim laugh. Come on. I actually suggested that as a panel topic, but...
The white elephant in the room?
Yeah, MB overrode me, so it didn't happen. But,
that's right.
I grew up in California. It was very diverse. I was the minority, okay? And when I started writing, I still remember the guy who wrote Spencer. Parker. I saw an interview with him, and it was when Spencer for Hire was big on TV. I don't know if you guys remember that awesome show. And it was before Star Trek Deep Space Nine, so Benjamin Sisko was actually called Hawk. Same character, different show.
Same character.
Yeah, well, I mean, he only has the two acting styles. But
I love the episode of Spencer where he punches Q.
Yes. And Spencer had kind of run its course, and they, you know, as Hollywood does, they were looking for a new way to keep it going, and so they spun him off into his own show, and it was Hawk. And they went to Parker, and they said, so are you going to start writing Hawk novels? And he said, no. I said, well, why not? He says, because I'm not an inner-city Detroit black man. I can't write that. I don't know how to write that. So I kind of grew up. Yes, Jim's putting his head down for the benefit of our listeners. And I started writing, and I thought, well, I'm not supposed to write people who are different than I am. And then I started playing World of Warcraft. And someone challenged me to role play as a female, because they said, actually, all the guys will give you good stuff. They'll give you gold. They'll take you through dungeons. It'll be so awesome. And you'll be tricked out in no time. So I did it, and I started role-playing as a female, and I thought, hey, this is actually, I can do this. And so I started writing female characters. What about you guys? How did you start? I'm asking the guys specifically. Jim and Chuck.
How do we start?
How did you start writing other characters?
I don't know.
Where did Miriam come from?
Miriam was just there. I know it sounds like the laziest thing in the world. but she was. She was always who she was, and she's kind of a pastiche of people I knew. I went to a college that was 70% female. Actually, three years before I got there, it was 100%. It was an all-girls school. And this is one of those times where the deck was, once again, foolishly stacked for me, because they were actively looking for men to go to the school. So I got a really great deal to go to this school, and I was like, oh, Jesus, guys have it so hard. So she just was representative to me of a lot of people I had known, and a voice that I was very familiar with. And I periodically will get criticism for the character in that they don't necessarily feel that she sounds very feminine, which is true to a point, but I also push back a little bit on that I don't want to necessarily say that that's what feminine has to be. She sounds like my wife. my wife has a far fouler mouth than I do, so I was like, this is what I know. But actually, that's an interesting point. The what I know is, I think what happens is you get these people who, and it's maybe an honest, earnest feeling, and that they don't want to write things they theoretically don't understand. It goes back to that, something what Jim was saying in his talk, that, well, I don't want to get it wrong. And that's, I think, honest and fair. Yeah. That being said, the whole write what you know shtick is a chestnut that maybe needs to be pulverized a little bit and sort of examined as to what that means. Because it's not an admonishment to not write things that you don't understand, because obviously then none of us would have written almost any of the books we have written. It's an admonishment to know more things. It's an opportunity for you as an author to say, I can know so much more. I can try harder. And for God's sakes, if you're looking to actually inject some kind of diversity, not as a quota, but as to broaden the book and to broaden the audience, why not try it? I mean, you're so much better off trying to write things that are brave and interesting and bold, and that risk yourself a little bit and risk the story a little bit, as opposed to being safe and milquetoast and you and just very, you know, little cubicle story. I mean, it's up to you to sort of reach out and try new things and see new things.
And it's also important to make sure when you're doing that to listen. The wonderful thing about the internet,
yes,
everyone is talking on there. You can find blogs from every point of view, and it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what you don't know if it hasn't been a part of your life. Like, I think it was Jim just saying that, didn't realize what kind of comments women were getting when they blog online, because it's just not happening to him.
Yeah.
So you don't know that until you hear from other people, and until you actively seek that out as well. There are a lot of great authors, great bloggers out there. Niecy Shaw in particular is one. She has,
yes,
I think, a whole book, Writing the Other.
Yep.
And she recently had a blog post reviewing The Other, which I loved, made me rethink how people review books and how you can't always just say, oh, I didn't connect with this character. It's like, well, why didn't you? Was it because they're not like you? Is there something, were they not written for you? Is that why? And it was very thoughtful. But.
Well, and you get, I mean, it also, I haven't read that blog post, now I want to, but growing up, I never had to learn that. I never had to learn to relate to these other characters. Whereas if you are a female fan of science fiction and fantasy, and the majority of what you're reading is all these guys running around, you learn to relate to those other characters. You learn to relate to characters outside of your experience. Whereas, yeah, there was never any motivation for me to have to do that.
Okay. I wrote this little thing here and I sent it to Carol because Carol was asking for something. How can a genre that dreams up alien cultures and mythic races in such minute detail seemingly ignore the ethnic, religious, gender, and sexual diversity right here on the home planet?
Very easily.
Yes. Obviously. Yeah. Well, to me, that's one of the most common failings I see when I read manuscripts of new writers, is the lack of diversity and lack of the homogeneous nature when they're creating a new kingdom, creating a new world. Everyone speaks the same language. Everyone believes in the same gods. Everyone is the same color. And sometimes that color is tan, you know, and it's so, but they're all the same color. And I say, if you want to make a world that's real, look at our own world and look at you, not only within, you know, the fact that there's India and China and Germany and the UK and the United States, but also the fact that there's the Balkans, where you have nations that have never been, you know, that people have tried to form nations of totally diverse cultures, and that, you know, they fall apart. You know, when you lose the strong man, they fall apart. This is a natural part of our world. And so if you want to write a world that's real, look at those kinds of things that are reflected in our own world. You have early, just technology, you have early adopters, you have Luddites. You know, in religion, you have the extremely conservatives, you know, the extremely orthodox, you have the, you know, the liberals, and, you know, I'm going to worship a tree people. You know, which is not, and that's a good thing too. And I didn't mean it. Anyway, but you see what I mean? That you have everybody, and so, you know, that if you want to write a world that's real and complex, and is the background or the setting or the inducement for a great story, make it real.
If I can offer two uncomfortable words to sort of describe this, human centipede. What happens is people read a lot of the same books, and then they regurgitate those same books onto their own books. Mm-hmm. And so the same book continues to sort of tumble around and around because they're not reading particularly broadly. They're not looking at their shelves and saying, is there anything new I can be reading? Is there different perspectives I can be looking at? They're not. They're reading kind of from a position of safety and comfort. Mm-hmm. And again, that's understandable, but there comes a point when you sort of have to look at the composition of the books on your shelves and say, can I do a little better? Can I read a little more broadly? And then live more broadly, go meet new people, talk to new people, and go to new places, and that will, you know, fill the books with new things and new experiences. That's what Write What You Know, kind of, to get back to that, I think that's how that funnels into the books.
Yeah, I mean, and this doesn't just apply to fantasy and science fiction writing. No. It applies to, if you're writing a romance and you're setting it in Chicago, where can you find, except maybe LA, a more diverse community? I don't know, Chicago may be more diverse than and, you know, there, you don't have to set it in one little area. You've got a huge range of people and experiences to draw on.
And so, in Chicago, I know a great Korean family who ran the Italian restaurant. Where else are you going to see that?
Have any of you ever watched Friends?
Yeah.
Have any of you ever actually been to New York City?
And when we talk about diversity, we're not just talking about sex and color and religious and all. There's a great column on SF Signal. It's called Special Needs in Strange
yes.
Worlds.
Yes, yes. I have her picture.
And, yeah, you have that?
Yeah,
you want to talk
I do.
About it?
I have that.
I'll let you talk about it.
This is, yeah, Sarah Chorn, who runs a review site called Bookworm Blues. She's a terrific reviewer. She's a terrific writer. And she's invited many, many, many different authors to write about diversity, about special needs of all kinds. We know, I mean, there's in science fiction and fantasy, and for a long time you didn't see very much of that. Heroes were all strong and and women were all strong and kick-ass once they got there.
Right.
And but then how interesting that these that your stories can be if you sort of bring in some other things. And so, you know, one of the first ones, Elizabeth Moon, who wrote a wonderful book called The Speed of Dark, which was about a young man who was autistic. And it's written from his point of view. And there's another book, I actually talked about it in my workshop this morning, which is called The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, which is also written from the point of view. It's a mystery written from the point of view of an autistic person. But now she's had this an immense variety of columns about diversity in fantasy and science fiction, and it's really, you know, I found it really rewarding. I found myself, you know, I write myself into these corners. You know, this about writing what you know is I've never been a warrior. I've never been a sword fighter. I've played with things, but I've never been a portrait painter. I've never, you know, any of the heroes and heroines in my book, I've never been any of those things. And I guess one of my challenges, I wrote myself into a corner where my narrator of one of my books is blind. And I said, oh, do I dare do this? And Sarah had me write a column about my experience in writing this book. And what I found was that I loved writing because I love writing challenges. You know, to me, it was one of the most enjoyable writing experiences I've had. It's scary, though. And what I was fortunate that I knew someone, a friend in Canada who is actually in the process of going blind right now. She's an elderly woman, but she pointed me to a young man who had gone profoundly blind when he was 20. And that's sort of what happened to my hero. Is he went profoundly blind, a little bit older than that. But I was able to vet my book through him. And the experience, the exchange, I got so much material that I could not use, which I just hated. But, you know, I found that, you know, my imagination got a lot of things right. But he found a few things. He said, oh, no, yeah, I would never do that. But he said, yeah, this part you got right. And
did he talk about the feeling the face?
No.
I've got a friend.
No, he did not.
To totally interrupt you here, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I've got a friend who is blind.
Into the mic.
I have a friend who is blind who used to talk to me about that particular image that you see in all of the movies and all of the books where I am meeting someone, so I'm immediately going to paw his face. I mean, I do this to Chuck all the time anyway. And she's like, I don't do this. I don't know anybody who does this, but it's what all of you people assume that we do.
That's right.
And it's one of those things that, yeah, I wouldn't have known.
Yeah, that's right. And I didn't do that. Thank God I didn't. I wouldn't have wanted to catch me on that. But I also found, as you were saying, resources on the internet of blogs of newly blind people who had been sighted before. And, you know, I want to know, do you dream? Do you dream in color? Yeah, you do. And one of the things Ken, my resource, told me was when he works on his computer, he said, I am so lucky. He said, I have the biggest computer screen in the world. I have no problem getting my windows all over it. He said, I can visualize. This was something I couldn't use. It was just so awesome that he, you know, I have this way over here. And it's just great. It's like I have a whole room full of screen. I thought, you know, what a great image that would be for somebody. If somebody wants to use that, you know, feel free, because I can point you to him. I can have you refer to him. But anyway, it was a great experience. And what Sarah's done is she's brought this into the light and has had many, many different authors writing about their experiences.
Yes.
And I highly recommend looking up her column.
I also want to point people to a blog called Disability and Kidlit. A lot of what they do are also contemporary, but there is sci-fi fantasy in there. And it was founded by two different authors who have disabilities. And I think almost all of their blog posts are written by people with disabilities, and often they review books and they talk about things that they see and tropes that are completely wrong, or at least from their point of view. And so it's just a good overview of what's going on in literature and what's going wrong, and things that you know that you don't know, that the cupping the face thing that for some reason movies do it, but it's not really a thing that happens in real life.
Interesting. Okay. And Jim mentioned, and Carol mentioned whitewashing. And it doesn't just happen in fiction. A very famous one that really, really annoyed me was M. Night Shyamalan's Last Airbender. Did anybody see that?
There was no M. Night Shyamalan's Last Airbender.
Yeah, just like there was no Star Trek V.
Yeah.
But they took this great show and completely whitewashed it with all these white characters, and it was just ridiculous.
They destroyed that show in so many ways.
I told you I had an interview with Elizabeth Baer, and she has a trilogy of books. I believe it's the Eternal Sky books.
The Eternal Sky.
That were specifically written for her best friend who has kids, and they are all of color, and there was nothing for them. And she thought that was profoundly sad. There was nothing that they could go to the bookstore and grab this epic fantasy or this kind of fantasy, and there was nothing for her to read to her kids at bedtime. Nothing that the kids could connect with. And so that entire series was born from that, from her wanting to be able to give those kids bedtime stories.
Mm-hmm. Very good books, too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very good books. I was thinking about opening up some questions. Does anybody have any questions? Anyone at all? Anyone who's read Pathfinder? I'm just teasing you.
Could you repeat the name of the series?
The Eternal Sky Trilogy.
Starts with Range of Ghosts?
Yes, Range of Ghosts, Shattered Pillars, and then Something of the Sky.
Stellaris.
Okay. Yes?
I had a question for you, Carol, when you're talking about the covers on your novels and how it wasn't like the character at all. If you tried to challenge that with the publisher, what would happen? Would they be like, we're not publishing you? Or
yes, let's talk about authors and covers.
when you're a newbie author and you start doing that, start challenging things, well, for one thing, you're too intimidated, I can tell you. You're too intimidated to challenge anything. You're just so happy, you know, this is happening.
Yeah.
You know, even if the first one is a really crappy cover. But you don't have any say, and you can get a reputation as a troublemaker. And
what do you know about marketing?
That's right. They'll tell you covers are marketing. And I have learned that good covers, it really doesn't matter if it looks like the character as long as it's a good look. Nowadays, because I have a reputation as somebody who is cooperative, and I push for small changes here and there, and they say, oh, yeah, we can do that, we can do that. And if that was to happen again, I would suck it up and I would say something. But, you know, your first covers, that's a real tough fight. And maybe you can, if you've got a really super blockbuster of a book and you know it and they've paid huge money for you, maybe you can do that.
It can actually get worse. Has anybody ever heard of a guy named Tobias Bukel?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, he's an author. He's from the Caribbean, grew up on boats. And he writes a lot of that into his stories. And so he had the story with this Caribbean character, and she was female, and she was of color. And when it came time to do the audiobook, they hired a very white, very British lady to do the voice. And he was horrified. He couldn't believe it. And I think he tells that story on his blog somewhere. But mm-hmm. And there was nothing he could do, of course.
Yeah.
And she's trying to do a Caribbean accent, and it's not... Yeah.
Not pretty.
Not at all, no. Any other questions? Anybody want to ask another question? Really? Nobody? Oh, no. I'm just kidding. You right here.
What about the backlash? Because this was a topic at a conference I was just at earlier this year. People saying, you don't have the right to tell that story. It's not your story.
Who wants to tackle that?
I'll
Amy does. Amy wants to. Go for it.
That's something where the thing is there's no really right answer, because that's a valid point of view.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, white people especially have butchered a lot of people of color's story. Actually, I think it was the other day, Melinda Lowe did a blog post that the title was something like, Can White Authors Write Characters of Color?
Yes.
And
yes, they can.
Well, yes, and good blog post.
Someone had,
please do.
Yeah, it's a really good blog post. But someone had written in asking her that question, and she was like, one, I feel like you're asking for my blessing as a person of color, and I'm one person. I can't give you that blessing. But so the question is really complex, and that's why it's something you have to do with a lot of care if you're going to go from a perspective that isn't your own, and just a lot of awareness. So it's not a yes or no. It's a how do you do it, and also when you do it and people are pissed off, accept that. Be accountable for what you wrote. If you disagree with them in some way, you know what? Their perspective is their perspective. Respect that and move on.
And here's the thing. I was in a read and critique with a published author whose name shall remain private, who's sitting right next to me. And she kept pushing the fact that if you just write good characters, just write the good characters. Characters that are engaging, characters that people are going to like and they're going to want to read, and you just hook them and engage them that way. Why can't they be of different colors and different genders and all that kind of, I mean, you can do it. I know it. I've seen it. I've read it.
But I think there's... Well, before we...
Yes.
Yeah. I want to run my mouth more.
But you have to pose.
Catch me later. I'm wearing too many clothes right now.
Okay.
And you're right, that's a hard question. There is no easy answer. We could spend the next 2 hours debating it, but you know, part of what's in that question is, okay, can I, as a white male author, write about female characters in my story? Can I write about characters who are non-white? Which is not the same thing as, can I write their stories? If I'm doing retold fairy tales, I loved being able to create a Sleeping Beauty who was basically Arabic and incorporating her, but I was telling the Sleeping Beauty story and the aftermath and all of that. Whereas one of the examples I heard is Kevin Smith a while back made a movie called Chasing Amy.
Woo-hoo.
And a friend of mine who is, you know, bisexual, There were some good things in that movie, but there were some things that he got wrong, and she told it to me that he's trying to tell our story, and he doesn't understand it. He hasn't lived it, and what the hell? You know, it's not that he was writing a bisexual character. It's that he was telling a story that's not his own, that he doesn't understand. The other thing that goes along with that is there are other people who are also writing that story, who have lived that story. And who are we paying attention to? Mm-hmm. You know, there are people writing very personal stories of what it's like to grow up black. And then, well, I'm going to pick on Chuck because that's just what I do.
Plus he's being there quiet. Like,
if Chuck comes along and writes a story where he's trying to write the black experience, suddenly we're all paying attention to what he did and ignoring these other voices.
And someone will probably call me brave for it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, right here in the blue, you had a question.
Yes. Is there ever a point where you have too much diversity in a story?
Who wants
no.
to answer? Yeah.
No.
I mean,
I can't think of one.
No one, like, thinks twice when there's, at least they haven't, when there's too many white people. And and there's actually even been studies, and this I've only seen from women, but I'm sure that it's applicable for people of color as well, that if you have a scene in a movie and it's 20% female, 80% male, it'll be seen as 50-50 by a male audience. If you have like 33% female and 66% male, it will be seen as a mostly female audience, a mostly female crowd, and it's this bizarre perspective. We overestimate what diversity is. So it really depends also on what point of view you're looking at, because a lot of people, you know, maybe they didn't have any white friends growing up. From their perspective, nobody's white in their story, and that makes perfect sense. And so that's not necessarily a too diverse kind of story. It's just different than the standard story that we're used to seeing at this mm-hmm. point.
It's kind of like, have you ever been to Louisiana? Anybody ever been to Louisiana? There's a lot of people of color there. You'll never see them on True Blood. What's up with that? Any other questions? Questions? Carol's got to say something.
I just want to say one thing about that. When you say too much diversity, and I'm not sure whether you're saying, okay, if every character in my story is a different race, that's possible. I mean, it's possible to do things wrong with stories. You know, I think we need to keep clear that we're still talking about good writing.
Yes.
You can have too many characters in a story. You can have not enough characters in a story. You can have, you know, you don't want to have the, I say, sometimes you have things sticking out like neon arrow signs saying, gay, 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 gay. No, not you. I was pointing at you.
As in Mordock Adama on the Gale character series.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that can happen. There's bad writing and there's good writing. And you know, your aim is to incorporate, you know, maybe these some new ideas into good writing. I just want to
read and critique, people. Read and critique. We have some questions over here. Yes, right here.
Okay. In light of the fact that there's no genre called men's lit, isn't it really sexist? In light of what you guys have been saying, that women's lit is a completely sexist genre.
Who wants to take it? Amy. Ooh, she's already.
Yes, it's sexist. I mean, I know a lot of people who do represent women's fiction and sales women's fiction, and it is so bizarre that if any of those works are written by a man, it's called commercial fiction. Or you know, if you have literary
or
and...
just fiction.
Yeah, or just fiction. It's just in the fiction part of... And it's such a bizarre thing, too, because the focus of the stories give it... You know, it's valid because that's a point of view that it was kind of... Okay, we're not getting literature stories that are focusing on these stories, so we want to emphasize that more. And then it became, you know, shunting aside rather than necessarily, hey, we're trying to get these stories out there. So it's a bizarre sort of thing. But yeah, it would make a lot more sense if it was just fiction.
I mean, we ran into it a few years back, and I don't want to talk about it very much because it was really ugly, but we had an article in Science Fiction Land community where columnists talking about, okay, we've been talking about all of these editors, now we're going to talk about some lady editors.
It discussed how they looked.
I just want to mention this real quick. I went to Vassar College, which was an all-women's college for most of its, you know, existence, and I was on the fencing team, and one of my teammates pointed out to me that whenever the website reported on our fencing matches, if it was, you know, both the men's and the women's, it was called Vassar Fencing. If it was just the men's, it was called Vassar Fencing. If it was just the women's team, it was called Vassar Women's Fencing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, guys, at our school.
Yeah, you've got the NBA, and then you've got the WNBA. Yeah.
Actually, the gentleman behind you, JT, he had his hand up earlier.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say that I've run a number of games for role-playing conventions, mm-hmm. and that's totally changed. In the 80s, it would have been a bunch of guys like me sitting around the table. Mm-hmm. And it came as a shock because now I have a hugely diverse table. I can have any age, any religion, any skin color. And the shared thing at that table is that we all like games or the genre or whatever the scenario is that I'm presenting. And I think that when we're writing, it's important that these characters have that shared love that keeps them in the group. But it's not just an affectation that I'm gay, therefore I'm duplicitous, or, you know, or it's not something like I just put on this bow tie. It's something that is, just part of their character, and they're here because of this reason, which may not have, it's not just an affectation or a goblin, you know, kind of thing to hide it behind, you know?
Sure.
I just, for the record, I don't know where you were going with that, but bow ties are cool.
Right over here.
I hate to mention this, but...
But you're going
to
do it anyway.
Women are playing catch-up. We haven't had the vote for that long. We haven't had the right to own property. My grandmother couldn't even own property. Well, she couldn't vote either. But the thing is, we are in the process of catch-up. And until we catch up, we're going to be way behind. But eventually... Because there's more women than there are men. And you are, we're the ones responsible for the civilization. I mean, that's the way it goes. That's why everybody's trying to keep us under control. Until there is a honest acceptance of, we're just as smart, we're just as tough. I'd love to see a man go to pregnancy. Oh, stop. I mean, wouldn't that be the greatest story in the world? A man to actually have some... to go to pregnancy.
No, thank you.
I'm good.
And let's face it, look at who he is. Oh, Lord. Anyway, but until we do catch up, we're always going to be behind. And the way we catch up is just to grit our teeth and go for it. Mm.
JT, you had a question?
I'm going to stand up so I can project a little bit.
Okay, project.
Because I'm tired.
Yes.
So I'm a middle-aged white guy. I hope to grow up to be an old white guy someday. Some of the old guard, or actually a vast majority of the old guard, if not all of it, is made up of old white guys. I feel they're doing me a disservice with the ugliness that you mentioned. How can I help fix that? Cultural, not writing.
Kill them. No. No, don't kill them.
What can I do to help fix this broken problem? You're not a broken on this problem.
Speaking as another middle-aged white guy.
With less hair.
Oh, man.
Dude, nobody asked. You have a voice. You have the ability to speak and be heard in a way that a lot of other people aren't. And it sucks, and it's unfair, and it's stupid. But I can go online and write a blog post about rape as an epidemic in our country. And a woman can go and write what's essentially the same blog post. I will get praised for it. I will get linked all over the place. She will get ignored.
Or harassed.
Yes, absolutely. Well, use that voice. Speak out.
Yeah,
and
privilege.
Use your voice to point to other people who are speaking. You know,
you're
because,
not the white knight.
Right. It's not, and it's very easy to, oh, it's all about me, I am awesome. Yeah. And I may be awesome, but don't let it become about you, if that makes sense.
Amy, did you have something you want to add?
Please. Jim went right on to that in terms of, you know, helping to augment other people's voices. And I always feel from a perspective of privilege, particularly use your voice for people who share your privilege. Like, you tell those old white guys. I mean, because they're more likely to listen to you and they're more likely to be in conversation with you. But I thought I had a note, but no, never mind.
Jim mentioned Gail Simone. And you want to talk about someone who has broken a glass ceiling. I mean, she is writing comic books, which is traditionally male and white guys. You know, I mean, Stan Lee, come on. And she's doing a great job. I mean, she had one of the most popular comics out there. Was it a Batwoman? And
the Batgirl,
then
yeah.
She took over probably one of the most controversial ones, Red Sonja.
And Tomb Raider now?
Yeah, and Tomb Raider.
I'm pretty sure Gail Simone is Red Sonja.
Any other questions? Oh, we have someone in the back. Oh, but before you do, Carol's going to, she's dying to say something.
I was just going to say, there's smaller things, too. I mean, in carrying a lance is, you know, on your white horse is one thing. But another thing is just read books by women and people of color. And when people ask you if you're on Goodreads, if you're on whatever, and they say, what are the good books you've read lately, mention one by a woman or a person of color. Mention one and say, you know, God, there was great world building here. You know, tell them that. You don't have to say it's like real, like diverse, whatever. But do that. I mean, that's a small thing. We're all readers. We can all do that. So, you know, think of things like that, too. It you know, because engaging trolls is pretty much useless. I mean, they're people, they're afraid. They're, you know, they're in this thing. They have their worldview. We see it everywhere. So do end arounds.
And I think also be aware of your own baggage. You know, take a look inward also, and I guarantee you, you'll screw up. I do it all the time. I put my foot in it. when people call you on that, the immediate reaction is, I'm not racist. That's like, okay, whatever, but this thing that you said or did, this bothers me. This is problematic. And instead of being that guy who then writes a 6-page article venting about the fascist PC police, listen, I'm just sort of, okay.
Empathy.
There's
logic.
There's something I've been telling people lately. Kids don't have this. We teach them. Mm-hmm. So don't teach your kids this crap. Okay? There was a question all the way in the back.
Yeah, so great example, in my opinion, humble opinion, The Way of Thorn and Thunder is a great example of a fantasy novel that uses a bunch of, like, there's tons of diversity in it. It's an amazing novel. Check that. It's written by a Cherokee author.
Who is it by?
Daniel Heath Justice.
Okay.
Way of Thorn and Thunder. But also, like, we're writing fantasy and sci-fi. We are writing the stories of the future, which means we're creating the future. Like, that's what happens. So, like, let's do it.
There you go.
Even when we're writing fantasy in the past, there were people of color back then. There were people who were not straight back then. And
really?
It's not just that we don't talk about it. It's that these people have been deliberately erased. And if you go, like, on, there's a Tumblr that's...
I was just going to say.
Medieval POC. And they will show things like, here is this painting that shows up in all of these textbooks, and it's this, you know, white lady. And then the next picture on the Tumblr is, here's the actual picture before they cropped out the black man. But this is all we publish. And it's, yes.
In a similar, have you ever seen pictures of actual cowboys from the American West? Lot of African-American cowboys. Mm-hmm. But you don't see those pictures.
Mm-hmm.
I had a question over here, and we're running out of time. Who had a question? I saw a hand. Yes.
I just wanted to say on the troll thing, I don't think that you will, like, online, I don't think that you will convince a troll, but I don't think just letting it slide. Also, I kind of disagree with that, because anytime, I'm a huge comic book fan, and Miss Marvel is awesome. She's a...
Yes.
She's a Muslim-American Miss Marvel. It's awesome. But anytime I'm sitting there and somebody is saying these awful, awful things, when one guy replies and says, you're a troll, shut up, boom, 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 there are all these replies, and I just sit there and go, oh, and it makes me feel so much better. I'm like, oh, you're not all like that, yay.
And you're not replying for the troll's benefit.
Yeah.
I'm a blogger too, actually, and I learned early on, for me personally, if I ever engaged with someone who picked on me, which, you know, occasionally, I'm a real TMI person. I put a lot of things out there on my blog, and in general, people are really, really respectful. I haven't had a lot of problems you're speaking of, but if I ever engaged with any of these crazy people, they just love that, and then they will reply. They're not going to let it sit, and of course, it's not like a Miss Marvel situation where, you know, there's going to be thousands of comments. On my blog, it would be, you know, you're going to see this guy, and he's just going to keep coming back. And it gets to be a conversation. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, it's better to just say, very nice, I believe in freedom of speech. You're entitled to your opinion. You can put that on there. I won't even delete it as long as there's not a lot of profanity or something that's going to really upset one of my readers. I'll leave it there. But I'm not going to reply to it. I just feel like that silence thing, oh, it kills them. They keep coming back to see if I responded. I had this last week. I just went, oh.
I think it's different when with you replying as the blogger.
Absolutely.
As opposed to the audience, and not arguing, but just saying, be quiet.
Right.
And folks, we are completely out of time. I'm going to, before you all grab your stuff, Amy, any final thoughts?
Oh, God.
I do
have a fantastic quote from Maya Angelou that I like to point people at whenever they're trying to think of how do I write people that aren't like me. And it's that I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. So always think how your words will make someone feel.
Chuck? You know, it's not just about what's in your stories, it's about supporting other authors too.
Yes.
It's about also looking at the institutional problems that exist in publishing and exist mm-hmm. in audiences, and just trying to be persistent and always working to improve.
Jim?
Yeah. What they said.
Daryl?
Write well. Write good characters. Think about them. Be respectful. Do your research.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our panelists.
Thanks to our moderator.
Thank you.
Thanks to the moderator. Yay, Patrick.
Clap for the moderator.
All right, I want to thank everybody for coming on this panel. We had Carol Berg, Chuck Wendig, Jim C. Hines, and Amy Boggs. Again, we were at the Pikes Peak Writers Conference. Thanks to all the folks there who helped put on such a great event. And I really appreciated all their help and the nice quiet rooms that they gave me to record in, which was pretty cool. You're going to hear some more stuff coming out of the Pikes Peak Writers Conference. I've got some secret stuff that I recorded. That's right. You don't know. Anyway, if you had any thoughts about this, I'm encouraging you, please, please, please leave a comment. Tell us what you think. Thanks for listening, and tune in next time for more from the Pikes Peak Writers Conference. Good stuff. I promise. Bye. Hail Hydra. Thank you for listening to the SF Signal podcast. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the link to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com, and you can also search SF Signal in iTunes to find the feed. If you enjoyed this podcast, help us boost the signal by telling your friends. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day. From weekly mind melts featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SFNF field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, new author spotlights, movie reviews, videos, science fiction, fantasy, and horror tidbits, free fiction roundups, and the new genre-related crowdfunding roundups. Click the RSS button in the sidebar to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
Magic wooey.
Wah, wah.
Thinking and crap.
And scene.